Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. When Donald Trump was elected in 2016, President Obama observed that Trump, quote, is not an outlier. He is a culmination, a logical conclusion of the rhetoric and tactics of the Republican Party for the past 10, 15, 20 years. In his new book, Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party, author Julian Zelizer, esteemed Princeton historian and CNN political analyst, pinpoints the moment when our country was set on a path towards the current era of bitterly partisan and ruthless politics. He argues that Newt Gingrich's political strategies in the 1980s, when he waged a campaign against Speaker of the House Jim Wright, have inspired some of the most divisive episodes in contemporary American politics, from the Tea Party movement to the Trump presidency. It is a great pleasure to welcome Julian Zelizer to the program this morning. Julian, thank you for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me.
Again, the name of the book, Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party. So my take on this book after reading it and enjoying it immensely, by the way, it is quite a tale. And answers a lot of questions that I have wondered about for a long time. You connect a lot of dots here. But my takeaway, it's all Newt Gingrich's fault.
Well, some will read it that way. And I do want to make the claim that he was an enormously important player in introducing the kind of partisanship we see from the Republican Party all the time now in 220, that he came into office, elected in 1978, at a time Republicans had not controlled Congress since 1954, and argued pretty insistently, you had to let the guardrails down, you had to be willing to do whatever was necessary in partisan war, from character attacks to destroying very key institutions. And that was the only way to achieve Republican power. And I believe we still live in the shadow of his success. And his success legitimated the arguments he was making.
So let's talk a little bit about that, of how he ultimately transformed American politics. Did he go in with an agenda to do so, or did that come just out of his nature?
He had grandiose ideas from the very beginning. His first two runs unsuccessful for the House are 1974 and 76. And it's pretty amazing in those early campaigns, he's already focusing on the theme that will animate much of his career about bringing down a corrupt Democratic establishment, an establishment that was only in power because it was unfair, it was autocratic. And he starts to connect that argument to elements of post-Watergate politics, such as the ethics rules that were put into place to clean up the way politicians did their business. And he's systematic about it. He writes memos constantly through much of his early career, telling Republican leaders they had to be aggressive, they had to be confrontational, they had to be more media savvy when they launched their attacks on Democrats. So this was a well-thought-out plan, and he understood what he was doing, and he stuck to this playbook throughout his whole career.
One of the things that you talk about is that it was thought that there were many in the GOP who tried to stop him, that were very concerned about the future of the party. And you make the point that they were more than willing to let him do this, regardless of the costs.
That's exactly right. And that was one element of the book that I went in not really knowing exactly what the answer was, meaning what was the relationship between the senior Republicans who had been in office for a long time and were not so comfortable with being as aggressive as he was, and Gingrich. And what I learned was, even though publicly they often distanced themselves from him or told the press and told colleagues they had no taste for his kind of politics, what quickly became apparent is all the senior Republican leaders embraced what he was doing, from the House Minority Leader, a guy named Bob Michael, who was a Illinois quiet go-along politician who started to echo a lot of the themes Gingrich was talking about in terms of corruption and Democrats, to George H.W. Bush, who in the middle of his 1988 presidential campaign starts to bring in the issue that Gingrich was raising about Jim Wright as a theme because he thought it would help him win election. So the leadership opens the doors to Gingrich arguments and to Gingrich himself when in 1989 they give him a leadership position as the House Minority Whip.
Talk a little bit about Jim Wright and the fact that he became such a villain that Gingrich was trying to slay.
You know, he was an old school Texas Democrat. He spent the period between 1976 and 86 as majority leader as things were heating up on Capitol Hill. A lot of Republicans didn't like him. He was tough. He was protecting the Democratic agenda as it faced the Reagan Revolution. He was personally not very liked, but I think most important, he was an old school Democrat, so he was vulnerable. He was never some example of grand corruption, but what he was guilty of was bad judgment, not thinking about how certain things he did, like selling a book that he wrote in bulk to groups before he appeared, how they could look bad in front of the press. So he was never guilty of anything very severe, but there was enough there that Gingrich could take it and spin a narrative, as he used to say, of his being the most corrupt speaker in American history. And so he was a perfect foil for Gingrich in 1989 as he was looking for someone who could embody the corruption of the Democratic Party on the public stage.
You write midway through the book that Speaker Wright didn't grasp the enormity of the conservative tempest that was taking shape in the late 1980s. As congressional Republicans started to come to terms with the limits of the Reagan Revolution, given the continued expansion of the social safety net and massive deficits, a growing number of them were drawn to the bare-knuckle legislative style that Newt Gingrich had pioneered. Speaker Wright, though, not the only one really not to grasp this.
Yeah, there was. It was fascinating to just study the Democrats, Wright and other leaders, who didn't really see where all this was going. They were aware of what Gingrich was doing, but I think most of them still thought of him in terms of Joe McCarthy, Senator McCarthy in the 1950s, meaning this tradition of outliers, of extraordinarily aggressive politicians. But in their minds, those politicians eventually were always put aside. They never became the leaders of the party, and they never won out. That the better angels of American democracy in the minds of many Democrats would eventually calm this tempest, and that they thought Republican leaders would never go along with this. And they were 100% wrong. They didn't understand how this was, in fact, the emerging voice and demeanor of Republican politics. And one example I give is as Jim Wright faces these accusations of ethics impropriety, his basic response through his lawyer was to constantly give reporters these very long legalistic documents explaining why Wright didn't break any any law, he didn't violate any ethics rules, just look at the technical language. Whereas Gingrich just got up in front of reporters and kept saying, this is the most corrupt speaker in American history. And I don't think Wright understood why his strategy didn't work and Gingrich's did. And he also thought Gingrich would go away. He called him a gadfly, and he just believed that could never be the future of Congress as an institution. And he was wrong.
I want to go back to something we were talking about earlier. Our next guest on the program is Larry Tye, who's just written a major biography on Joe McCarthy. You reference McCarthy in your book because you're saying that unlike when Republicans reined in McCarthy and were concerned about this of going a little bit too far, that we really saw the Republicans when it came to Newt Gingrich putting him in power, making him one of their leaders, and letting him go for it.
Yeah, and that really is a difference. And my story ends before he's Speaker. He's House Minority Whip, which for many listeners, it's not clear what that is, but it's an important leadership position. It puts you on the path to power. by the time Republicans vote to put him in that position, he was a well-known commodity. I mean, it was in the throes of this right scandal, and everyone in Washington knew that Gingrich was a politician who lowered the bar of what was permissible and was saying things that most politicians really weren't comfortable doing in terms of attacking their opponents. And yet they vote to make him one of the leaders. And even moderates like Olympia Snowe and Nancy Johnson, who are very much to the center of the party, they're not Gingrichites in terms of their politics. They vote for Gingrich. And this is where the story takes a different turn than Larry's book. And it's not simply the leaders of the party using Gingrich. They decide to make him a leader. And once you do that, even if you think you could contain that style, that just proves to be untrue. And you can see how his career unfolded as legitimating that kind of partisanship rather than Republicans containing it.
I want to talk a little bit about Gingrich's legacy, because how has it changed with Donald Trump now and him sort of him getting a bit of a credit for the Trump style, which, I mean, obviously we'll see how things go here in the that legacy will be put into a bit more perspective after the election. But as of right now, where does the Gingrich legacy go, considering that it certainly had its bruises after his speakership?
I think for a long time and through today, there are a lot of Republicans who still admire what Gingrich did. I think certainly in the Tea Party era during the Obama years, when you had a new generation basically replicating and perfecting Gingrich-style politics, including figures like Senator McConnell, that they at some level admired him. He was a warrior. He was a partisan fighter who didn't care about things like civility, and that's why they achieved power, and they did the same thing. And that's true right through President Trump. But the question is, as this kind of history of the Republican Party and the way it works out right now with President Trump in office, does it become so debilitating and damaging at an electoral level that the party come 2021 or maybe a few years later is left thinking the costs were enormous to us right now in terms of our keeping our power and what it did to the nation? Do we revisit the legacy? Do Republicans revisit the legacy? But as of now, he's a statesman for the party, more than the Bushes in some ways. It's Newt Gingrich who's the senior figure who can talk about where this party has been and where it is right now.
The name of the book is Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party. It is published by Penguin Press. Julian, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.